Hello. It's just amazing that the time I was scheduled to come here was snowing, and that was only a few months ago, and now the sunshine is just unbelievable. It's like so wonderful to live in a country where we have such extremes of weather. We never get bored with it, do we? We never get bored and say, yes, it's always something to talk about. So my name is Vivian Wiggins, and I live in Colchester. I arrived in Colchester in August 2000, and Colchester is a town where lots of people arrive to. And so I always ask people, how long have you been in Colchester? So I got here in 2000, and I live in Lexton with my family, and I've got six children altogether, which sounds like a miracle, but it's because my husband had three and I had three. So we formed together a blended family, and they range from 28 down to twins at 19. So I've had my hands full a lot of these years. And I go to King's and Church in Lexton, which is a bun above Aldi. So you go to church, do your shopping. It's quite a nice arrangement. But today I'm going to talk to you about Beacon House. And thank you as a church for supporting Beacon House in 100 different ways all through the years, with donations, with money, with your prayers. And so I'm going to tell you a bit about why we do what we do. And that will help you understand a bit more about how you can get involved. Often people expect me to preach around the parable of the Good Samaritan, because that's their vision of what Beacon House does. It's a guy who's been rejected by everyone else. He's on the other side of the road. Everyone else ignored him. And, you know, we go in and help. But the reason I've chosen the parable of the talents is because it's seeing people in a different way. And a lot of the guys who come in to Beacon House, most people consider they have no value or worth at all. And yet that manager who went off and left those people, he gave something to everybody. And it's just how you use it and how we use what we're given, which is important. So I'll keep referring back to that through the course of my talk. And because Jesus told stories, I think that's a good model. So I'll be telling you stories about real people, changing their names, but it'll just give you an idea of how we help people and what we're doing. So Beacon House was set up, as Richard said, out of Colchester Baptist Church, out of Open Door, in 1996. And it was set up to help the homeless, to support those who are homeless and those at risk of homelessness. Is there anyone in this room who doesn't think that they're at risk of homelessness? Because the reality is that everyone could find a relationship they're in suddenly changes. And what you thought was stable is stable no more. Everyone might have a retirement plan and think, that's what I'm heading for. And then, you know, some change of banking arrangement in career changes the whole future. Everyone might think they're stable where they are. So actually, our remit is almost like to help everybody who could be at risk of homelessness. And there are lots of different categories of people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. So first of all, there's the rough sleepers. And they're the people who have nowhere to sleep at night at all. And you can sometimes confuse them with the street beggars. So the people who are begging on the street in Colchester will tell you they're rough sleeping. And many of them aren't. They've just sat there for the day because it's a good place to earn money. If I were to walk up and down the high street, I could probably tell you where we've housed each one of them, and we know which bits they're living in. But they are still poor, but they're not homeless, and they might just be living on the bare minimum of benefits. They might have had their benefits sanctioned. So don't confuse all the people who are sitting on the high street as homeless, because they're not all homeless. And there's probably about 25 rough sleepers in the town, and they are living in various sort of rural areas, sort of like on high woods in down the bottom of East Hill. And then there's others who will find themselves in squats and other places. So the high street is not a good place to actually sleep at night, because you will get beaten up, you'll get weed on, you'll get all sorts of things onto you. So the people who are down there in the daytime are there because it is a good place to get money. It's a trading activity going on. And while there's a trading going on between them telling you a good story and you giving them a fiver, so that's that transaction going on, there's also, if you wanted to buy heroin, which most of you would want to do, if you wanted to buy heroin in the town, where would you go to? You'd probably go to one of those guys sitting on the high street. So while you think he's there, you know, homeless, he's actually, that's the best open place to be, where anyone who wants drugs could go and get them. So it's a confusion that the people on the high street are not always the ones who are the most vulnerable, but they can tell a good story. So that's one pocket, is people who are rough sleeping. Then you've got people who've got some sort of hostel accommodation. They might be in a night shelter or NACRO, and they've got a bed for the night, but they've got nothing to do during the day. And in terms of motivating people and getting people in touch with the agencies they need, they also need support as well. Then you've got a whole bunch of people who are sofa surfing. And that sounds really sort of interesting, you know, sort of like sounds, you know, sofa surfing sounds glamorous. But people are having to beg a bed for the night. And it might be a room on a floor, it might be a bed, it might be anything. And the price they have to pay for that bed for the night is often beyond what you'd want them to pay for it. And they're getting involved in social networks which aren't good for them. And then you've got a whole range of people who are housed, but it's only a temporary arrangement. So therefore, at any moment, they can say, we've looked at your records, and because we don't think that the reason you left your last house is a valid one, then therefore you're homeless tomorrow. And they literally get a 24-hour notice to go. And then you've got a load of people who are housed in temporary accommodation, and they are in hotels all around the town and often as far as Ipswich, where the local authority said, well, we know you're homeless, but all we've got for you is this bed and breakfast. And so there's all of those people who are all at risk of homelessness. There's a lot of people as well who have been given a tenancy, and just because you get a flat to live in, you still haven't sorted out your friendship groups. So you might have someone moving in, taking over your tenancy. You still haven't sorted out your finances, so you don't realise if you don't pay your rent, you're going to be made homeless again. You might not have sorted out your mental health issues. So even when people are housed, they still need Beacon House. And all the people who needed Beacon House last year were 700 different individuals. And that's rising by an average of 15% every year since the last 5 years. And the reasons for that, partly is because the town is growing. Has anyone noticed there's some new houses been built in Colchester? Exactly. So as a town grows, other problems grow as well. So if you were trying to get a doctor's appointment in Colchester now, you remember a time you could just ring up and get an appointment. And now nobody, it's more complicated to do that. So if you were sort of reasonably well and you felt confident and you had plenty of time to be on the phone, you can probably get yourself a doctor's appointment. But if you haven't got that thing, so if you're not confident on the phone, you've lost your phone, and there's chaos in your life, you can't even get a doctor's appointment to get the tablets that you need to calm yourself down if you've got a mental health issue. And therefore, you get angry with your landlord or somewhere you're living, and you get made homeless. So that's where the pressure of the whole town growing is gradually making more and more people need our services, if I've made that link properly. So the more resources get squeezed, the ones who can't access it, they're becoming a bigger and bigger group of people who can't get to do something which would be normal. And as well as that, we are getting more and more known to other agencies, because other agencies are stopping their services. So, for example, in a hospital now, I think there's a certain time, and once you've had your operation, that's it. Once you've had your operation, that's, you know, your 48 hours and you're out. They don't mind that you haven't got anywhere to go to. They don't mind they're actually putting people out on the street. And that, again, is putting pressure on... Well, it's not pressure, it's just showing why we're growing in our services. And the challenge is to know who of those 700, what they want and what they need, because there's a story of what they want and there's a story of what they need. And I remember once being in my office, and Beacon House is over 5 floors at the moment, and my office is next to a quiet room. This guy said, could I borrow the phone, because he wanted to ring his mum. And he was on the phone. I could hear what he was saying. And he was saying, oh, mum, I've just been housed and I've got this, you know, tenancy, and I'm really going to make a go of it this time. And I just need 300 quid for the deposit. And mum, and I couldn't hear the other side, but from what he was saying, she was obviously saying, but I've done this before. And he was saying, no, mum, this time I really mean it. This time I'm really going to make it through. Yeah, I've given up the drink now. Yeah, I'm not drinking anymore. And you could tell this was a long relationship where the mum had been wanting to believe in him, wanting to give. And I felt so sad. And by the end of it, you know, his mum had obviously said, yes, you can have the 300 quid. And I could overhear this conversation. So I then went upstairs to the cafe where we run services. And I said, look, this chap's just been given a flat. Can we start giving him some crockery and some plates and what have you? And the woman running the cafe said, what do you mean? He's been housed for 6 months now. He's got everything he needs. And yet his story to his mum on the phone, and all he wanted was 300 quid for something else. So the challenge for us is to hear these stories, which are so convincing, so powerful, so emotive, and yet realising what do they actually need. So one of the first key principles that we try and instill at Beacon House is the truth. And the truth has become a victim, because systems are in place that if you're over 35, you get this much benefit. If you're under 35, you don't. If you have these conditions, you get these welfare benefits. If you're not, you don't. So the system, which was designed to help people, has actually encouraged people to massage their circumstances. And if people are surviving as a homeless person, they've learnt to massage their circumstances. So the first thing we do is try and get people to tell us exactly what it is that's going on. And we have a chat with them, but as well as a chat, we're listening to what they say in the cafe, what they're saying with the laundry. A guy came in the other day, you know, said he was rough sleeping. And so we said, yeah, we'll do your laundry for you. And the woman doing the laundry said, well, how come, you know, there's women's clothes in this lot as well? And we found out he was actually living with his sister. And so he wasn't homeless at all. And because we were doing the washing. So they're just a little bit tricksy. And therefore, at Beacon House, we have resources and we have to be wise of what we give to people and what we don't. So the people who are coming into our services are the people on the edge of systems. And it might be they're running between... they're sort of in care systems if they've got no family, and they run to 18 and then suddenly the care service stops. It could be people who are coming out of prison, and when they left to go to prison, everything was sort of in place and it's now all broken down and they're coming out. It could be people who are coming out of families where there's been mums say, look, we're not having this behaviour anymore, so we want you to leave, or family breakdown, relationship breakdown. If there's a family breaks up, it's usually the mum with the children who gets the house and the father becomes homeless. It could be those people who are mentally ill and they just don't know how to cope with the daily living of life. And if people have got a mental health problem and they can't get support, they might turn to street drugs. And everyone thinks it's the other way around. Everyone thinks, oh, you've got an addiction problem, that's why you become homeless. But actually, if you can't get the medication you need, you can get... marijuana and heroin and crack cocaine easier than you can buy a pint of beer in a pub these days, and that's just the way the world is. So if you're vulnerable, you'll start taking street drugs, and then that gets you into a whole other setup. And I often wonder, when does homelessness start? And you can look at someone and think, oh, he must have just lost his job, or he might have lost his home. But sometimes the fundamental core of who someone is breaks down a lot earlier than those other practical things happen. How come some people can cope with a stressful situation and others can't? We're dealing with a young woman at the moment, we'll call her Mary, and her mother was homeless and she was born into that situation. She was sort of sofa surfing and there were different father figures around the house. And when she was seven, her mother realised that she was a source of potential income. So her mother started selling her for sexual favours when she was 7 years old. So she's now 25, and she herself is sort of struggling to cope with life, and she's sort of in one housing situation. She breaks down, falls over. But I wonder, did she ever have a chance to use whatever talents she'd been invested with? And she now is trying her hardest to get through life, but every now and then we get something set up for her. She wants to be a hairdresser, we've arranged an apprentice, and just before it's due to start, she sort of backs off. And you realise that she's never understood what her place is in life and who she really is, because that start was so fraught, so dreadful. So we could believe that she's not using her talents properly. If you didn't know her story, you wouldn't know that. But it's when you look at someone, you think, well, why haven't you invested your talent? But then you do the backstory, you find out a bit more about them, and you realise, what chance did you have to go with the talents you've been given when you were born? There's another chap who comes in regularly, and he's probably in his late 40s, and he was an investment banker, and he went to school, and he got his qualifications and his degree, and he lived in a really nice house. And the pressure of working was so great that he had a mental breakdown. And it was a really severe mental breakdown that actually has affected his mobility and his speech patterns as well. And he was in hospital for a long time after he had the breakdown. And in the time he was in hospital, his wife and his children arranged all the documentation and the assets so that when he came out of hospital, he had nothing whatsoever left, and they'd taken all his property and all that sort of thing. So he comes in every day. He's housed, and he's got a nice little bed set, and he comes in and has a cup of coffee, and he eats whatever we give to him to eat. And although he can't speak properly, we asked him, because he has a shower when he comes in. We're checking out resources, thinking, well, you live somewhere, you don't need a shower. So we asked him why he had a shower. And in his broken speech, he managed to convey that he knew that if he fell over in his shower, no one would ever find him. And so he had a shower with us, not because he didn't want to go home, but because there was that sense of nobody looks after me. Nobody, the social services have said, you're at no risk to yourself and you're at no risk to others. So therefore, there we are, there's your flat, benefits, rent's paid for you, and that's it. And so it's like they're doing their job, they're doing the bare minimum, and that's where Beacon House, we pick up all the bits who fall through the gaps, all the people who need other things. So what do we do? And you support us long enough, and we leave with you some nice leaflets about, you know, the jobs we do and the services we provide. But if you were to read through the leaflets, we're essentially doing what it says in Matthew 25. And if you read a bit further on from the parable which Jenny read, it talks about the sheep and the goats. And the king says to those on your right, I know you. And he says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was homeless and you gave me a room. I was shivering and you gave me clothes. I was sick and you stopped a visit. I was in prison and you came to me. So we're always doing those things. And those are the things that we're asked to do 2,000 years ago. That's what everyone's asked to do. And new funding streams come out, and one might be called reaching communities, and one might be called improving better care, and one might be called transition funding. And they're all of them putting loads and loads of fancy words on those essential things: feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, visiting, healing the sick, and doing the poor. So that's why Beacon House manages to work with lots of different agencies, national agencies, local agencies, because we're doing fundamental things that everyone knows that's what they should be doing, but they don't know how to do it anymore. It's sort of all dressed up in language. So we invest in people as God invested in us, and we get to know people and we sort of find out what their circumstances are, and depending on what they need, we give them different things. But the major difference about Beacon House is that we believe in that person before they even walk in the door, and we're not seeing them as the job centre might see them, as a claimant, or as a drug agency might support agency might see them, as a substance misuser, or as probation see them, as an offender. And they see all those things, and we see them too, but we see them as the whole person. We see them as someone who God sent Jesus to die for, and regardless of what they've done on their worst possible day, we know there's a better day for them. And so it's the way we treat them which is how it's different. And the verse that Richard wrote earlier about believing people have a hope and a future, we believe that about people, even when everyone else has written them off. We had a mental health worker from another agency come in and work with us, because we work with lots of different agencies in the building. And she was, you know, had a nice morning chatting to people, helping them with different things. And when she got back to her office that afternoon, I got a phone call, and she was so cross, really livid, really angry, really frightened. And she said, I've just spoken to Charlie. And I said, yes. And she said, I've just got back and read his file. And I said, yes. And she said, well, do you know he's a murderer? And I said, well, I knew he'd been an offender. And she said, do you know that he's done this? Do you know he's done this? And she'd read his file and read all this dreadful stuff about him. And she said, and you let me talk to him. And I said, I bet he made you a cup of tea. He said, well, he made me a nice cup of tea. And I said, I bet he showed you his artwork. And he said, well, she said, wonderful. And I said, and at any time, were you in any danger? Were you ever on your own with him? Were you ever... And she had judged him. So she'd had a really nice chat with him in the morning, because she'd seen who he really was. But just because she'd read his file, read his labels, she suddenly got panicky. So actually, that whole conversation, turned into a massive learning thing for her. And she said, I've learnt more in this conversation than I have in all my training as a mental health worker, because everyone is so quick to label people. And imagine if you were labelled for the rest of your life for the worst thing you'd ever done. And the reality is, we've all had bad days, we've all done bad things, but we know a forgiveness, we know a second chance, we know that continual being told every day is a new beginning. And so what we do is we take that understanding that we have at Beacon House, that there is hope, there is future, there is forgiveness, and we just apply that to the people who come in who aren't getting any second chances. When it comes to the parables, this parable in particular, I used to be quite tough, and I used to read that parable and I'd think, well, you know, that one who's got nothing, or took the one talent and did nothing, well, he deserves it. You know, he didn't work hard. I must admit, hard work is one of my weaknesses, probably. But when everyone doesn't use what they've got, I used to be so hard on them and think, you know, well, no wonder you're not getting anything because you're not achieving. But I've gradually changed the way I think about that, because I'm seeing there are so many people who get interrupted in what they should have done. And just as the young girl I told you about earlier, there was another young chap, and he has got a wonky eye. There's probably a medical term for wonky eye. But one eye looks in that direction, the other one looks in that direction. It's called what? Well, yes, or it's not work. So one doesn't move, and the other one follows you around the room, what have you. So again, in the environment we're in, he's obviously seen the nurse, and she's talked to him, and we're in different situations. And we just said, oh, you know, what happened to your eyes? Is there anything we can do to, you know, get you into a consultancy? And he said, it's too late now. He said, because, you know, I was younger, and he was living at home with his mum, and mum had different boyfriends who came in to live at different times. And the boyfriend at the time had been annoyed with him crying or shouting or whatever, you know, making noise at 3 years old. And so he kicked him. And so the child, what he got was a broken eye socket. But mum wouldn't take him to the hospital because she was frightened of losing her boyfriend or frightened of social services getting involved. So therefore he went to school. That bones heal. If you don't do them properly, they'll heal themselves anyway. So he went to school and they always thought he was stupid or lazy because he was actually half blind. And so he went further and further to the back of the class, couldn't read, couldn't understand, came out of school with no qualifications at all. And then what do you do if you've got no qualifications, you can't get a job? There's options which are criminal. And so he therefore started stealing, robbing, what have you, and then went into prison. So his life is now prison, homeless, prison, homeless, and he's on that cycle. So we understood all that, but he'd never revealed he couldn't read. So one of our volunteers, her talent is that she can teach people literacy. So it's not a massive thing, it's not a big literacy class, you know, come and have a literacy class because you can't read. But very gently, we sort of teaching him by saying, oh, do you want to do some cooking? So he's doing some cooking. So what, you know, what's it say here? And we're teaching him to read without him knowing that we're teaching him to read. And that's the best respect we can give him, because he's hidden that all his life in terms of literacy. So again, you look and you think, well, that talent you had, it looks like you buried it. So a lot of our job as well is taking off the bricks and the blocks and the things that got in someone's way, which makes them bury their talent. I've learnt to be more compassionate since I've done this job. And I think we were just singing a song that says, turn that flicker into a flame, turn that spark into a flame. And I'm a very organised person. I brought my organisation skills to Beacon House. But God has softened me so much. And there was a time when I used to be thinking, well, you know, why isn't everyone doing everything they can? Why isn't everyone, you know, giving away all their money to the poor and all that sort of thing? But the reality is that everybody's on a journey. And some people are more obviously in need because they might be sitting on a doorway, or they might be looking rough and ready, or they might have mental health problems. But the fact is, we're all on that journey. And whether we've got our housing sorted out and our family sorted out or not, we're still on that road to learning what God is telling us to do with everything he's given us to do. The other thing about investing in people is that we have volunteers at Beacon House, and they all come in and they're always nervous about working with homeless people because they've heard the stuff about drug use and violence and all that sort of thing. And we always convince every volunteer that whatever talent they have, they are the right person for that day. So we start every day with a prayer meeting, and we allocate where people are going to go and what they're going to do. And often we stretch people out of their comfort zones. And there's this one lady who once came, she said, I can't cook. And one day when she was in, we didn't have anyone to cook. And I said, well, you know, could you cook for 60 people a day? And she said, oh, I'll have a go. But the reality is that all the guys coming in, a lot of them have been in prison. So if you ask them to peel potatoes for 50 people, they're quite okay with that because they've learnt to cook in prison. So again, it's taking that, not that we have to do it all ourselves, there will always be the resources available. But we have different volunteers of different ages, and some people work and some people are students and some people are retired. And there was one lady who used to love doing needlecraft and craft and sewing. And one day this chap came in, and he was usually very pleasant. He was one of the service users, usually quite calm and peaceful. And that day he was really angry and he was getting very upset. And we could tell it wasn't something we'd done, but we wondered what was the matter. And what happened is for a long time he'd been in prison, and he'd been out for about 2 years. And in all those 2 years, he'd been trying to see his daughter, because as soon as he got put into prison, the wife arranged that he could never see his daughter again. So he'd taken him all this time, and finally he was seeing the daughter on Saturday. And he was getting angry because it was covering his fear, because he didn't know what to say to this daughter he hadn't seen for so long. And so while he's telling this volunteer the story, she's quietly sitting there sort of sewing a bit of material together. And as he's talking, she says, well, look, this is a little girl mouse, and this is a daddy mouse. And she's made two little finger puppets with mice. And she said, why don't you pretend to be the daddy mouse and I'll pretend to be the little girl? And she said, you practice what you're going to say. So in our cafe, you know, other people drinking, you know, have coffee and on the computer, and in the middle of it, this grown man with this older lady have a little mouse role play. And of course, when he's telling his daughter about how sorry he is for what he's done, he gets really upset and really emotional, and it's just these little mice. But the fact is, he could do that there so that when he saw her on Saturday, he didn't do that and didn't frighten her. Because imagine if you met a grown man you'd never met and he started getting emotional. So it's just so powerful that all this volunteer could do is the stitching, the craft, but she managed to create a situation where that guy got so much healing, and the daughter would have got the healing because she'd have met him and he felt solid. And the conversation ended and he went off and had his lunch, and she wrapped these little mice puppets up and said, they will take those with you on your visit on Saturday. So I don't know how I can ever tell that story in the frame of a funding bid, which is asking me for outcomes around changed behaviour and models of activity. But all I know is that in those little examples, we're using all the talents that everyone's been given and turning it into something wonderful. And we could never do it on our own, but if you trust that God is under everything you do, then even the tiny little bits transforms people's lives. And that's what we're doing. And the main thing about investment is that Beacon House is moving this year. We've been in that lovely building, five stories, since 1996. And it's quite difficult to run the service over all those stairs. For one thing, there's an awful lot of stairs to climb for the staff. And the stupid thing is that we've got the store of the food in the basement and the cafe's on the third floor. So if you forget a tin of beans, that's not a minor thing. That's like a 15-minute journey through the building. And I think one of your congregation, Derek, actually, he couldn't climb the stairs anymore when he was volunteering for us. It's a real physical hazard. But apart from the physical challenge, for the people who are out on the streets who don't know who they are and don't know who their friends are, if we say, oh, you know, come up to the third floor, we're doing something fantastic today, that's where the computers are, that's what we're doing, they can't go up three flights of stairs. They don't know who's going to be up there. And all the things that we're not frightened of actually are things that really bother them. So since 2015, I've been looking for a premises on one level. Ever since we had a time and motion study guy came and looked at what we were doing, and he told us we were wasting 25% of our time with the stairways and the doors and all the complicated. And we've been tired ever since that. You know, before someone tells you that you're using a quarter of an hour of your energy, But anyway, we've been looking for this building for a long time, and we've now got something virtually 100% set, and it's at Norfolk House, which is the corner of Southway and Crouch Street. And so it's... Fisher Jones Greenwood, with a solicitor at the bottom, and Frank Wright Butchers was on the end of Crouch Street. It's that bit of Crouch Street, so we're opposite that. So it's all on one level. It's 4,000 square foot, and we can put our showers and our laundry and our nurse and our computers and our cafe and our assessment rooms and our social space all on one level. And it's going to be so different the way we operate. We're going to be able to open longer, open wider, have a wider reach. But for me, managing this, we're moving from one building to another, and it's a leased building, and we're taking out a lease for 15 years. So there's a part of me that's saying, well, what if we can't get money for 15 years? What if the resources run out? And then I remember every time I think that's reminding me of what the world would say as opposed to what God says. And what God says is, whatever I've given you, you invest it and you return it to me. So when we're moving to this other building, we're taking our existing building, 5 stories, and turning that into 9 flats. And we've had planning permission for 9 flats. So that's another 9 households, another 9 people that we'll be able to take off the streets. We're housing the homeless. We're adding that to 3 houses which we've been bought by different people around the town, where we can put 4 people in them. So when you look at what we were given, when you look at what Open Road started in 1996, and then you're looking at how we're developing that. And yes, I can talk calmly now, but at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's quite a worry about where I'm going to get the money from, or, you know, the sort of things. But the reality is that God is telling me all the time, keep on feeding the hungry, giving drinks to the thirsty, housing the homeless. And if we stick to those principles that God has asked us to do, then all the other stuff just becomes process. And we're all hoping at Beacon House that he will say, we gave you 5 talents and you've returned it double. And it's not just in the buildings, it's actually in the people. And the people that other people would have said, you know, write them off, they've got too many crimes, they've got too many drug issues, they've got too many issues. We are turning those people into people of value and purpose. And that's what we do at Beacon House.